bugging you, Murphy?
Drugs. Drugs bug me.
In a laboratory test, female animals treated with the active component in marijuana experienced a 44% death rate among their offspring.
They seem to be in a state identical to that curious 20th century earth disease called hard drug abuse.
I just want to shake some sense into you kids that are using drugs and think about using. So remember, don't.
Montucky Skies.
Welcome to Montucky Skies. I'm Biggs.
And I'm Brandon.
No Zach tonight. He had to do a bunch of plays in a row, so he had to take the day off. Kind of understandable.
Yeah, he's a hardworking man.
Yeah, that's right. And he's also got stuff to do with the Loy, so I get it. Speaking of the Loy, I just wanted to throw out a quick plug. Please listen to the Thin Men podcast. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it at the Blogspot page, all that stuff.
Man, you got that through on iTunes quick.
I did, yeah. That's because there was no swearing.
That helps.
Yeah, I was able to actually put it through with no advisory on there. So I guess I just go through a little bit faster. But yeah, we don't swear on the show. We're doing it for the Myrna Loy, so we keep it clean. But it's still fun, I think. Which was the funny thing is I was reviewing a French film last week, which like had some hardcore nudity, and I was just avoiding talking about it. I think Zach said something about steamy at one point, and I just didn't take the apple because I knew that I would have to edit.
That's definitely some low-hanging fruit right
there.
Yeah,
that's going to have to edit everything out. But if you get a chance to see that movie, there's some hardcore nudity in it. But anyway...
If you're feeling one of those nights here in Helena where you're feeling kind of lonely, this is the film for you.
Yeah, there you go. It was pretty good, but if you want to hear my review, it's on The Thin Man. You get to hear it literally after I watched it. Like, I went straight from the theater with Zach. Like, he just locked up the Loy really fast, and we came back and recorded it. So it's probably like 25 minutes after I just finished watching the movie. So it was a pretty short one, too. It was like 76 minutes, so...
All right.
Yeah, it felt like a full movie, but...
And you had a... Did you have a guest on this week?
We did, yeah. We interviewed Nick Pavlovich and another actor from Assassins. His name escapes me at the moment. Sam, God, I feel bad.
I'm sorry, Sam.
Yeah, sorry, Sam. I forgot your last name. I only met you once, but I guess I sort of met him twice because I went to the Assassins play and... They have this thing set up outside of the play where it's like a carnival because the set is like a roller coaster.
And interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. Like they had beanbag toss and or cornhole.
The cornhole game.
Yeah, the cornhole if you want to go there. They had like a super giant like Jenga thing. And I was telling my wife, I'm like, don't stand too close to that because I know there's the potential to get hurt near those Jenga blocks. I won't get into the details, but yeah, they had like ring tosses and all kinds of stuff. It was kind of fun. So we showed up a little bit early because I saw all that stuff after I went to the French film, and I was like, oh, well, the kids might like this because I took my 13-year-old River to it and her friend, so who stayed with us for a couple of days. So we had the extra 13-year-old around the house. Actually,
hopefully they're not dropping acid anymore.
No. These two were not involved in that. They were at the party though, so yeah, no acid at the show that I could tell. It was pretty fun. So you got a review for us.
A review?
Yeah, aren't you gonna review Pink Floyd?
So I got a copy of the new Pink Floyd album, The Endless River, and I've so far only listened to the first track of it, and it is really good. It's almost like it's almost like the recut of Shine On You Crazy Diamond.
Really?
Yeah.
Like the song?
Like if you like listen to like somebody covering Shine On You Crazy Diamond or and it, I mean, it's really good instrumental music. It was really, really interesting. It's called It's What We Do.
So is it like a longer song then?
It's 5 or 6 minutes and 17 seconds.
Ironically, that is not a long song for Pink Floyd.
No.
That's about a normal length. Especially like Shine On You Crazy Diamond, if you do all six parts, that's somewhere around 30 minutes, I think.
Yeah, it's a good solid chunk of time there.
Yeah, because I think 1 through 4 is, I believe, the entire A-side of Wish You Were Here if you listen to it on a record. And then on the B-side, you got a couple of songs, and then you got part 5 and 6. Dude, that is such a... Can I just say something about historical Pink Floyd really quick?
Yeah.
Wish You Were Here, I think, is their most underrated album.
I really like that
album. Yeah, I would put it on this... And I think I talked about this before, but Dark Side of the Moon, even though it's the most popular one, I think is the best one. But I would put Wish You Were Here on the same platform as, like, The Wall. Like, I think they're equally good.
You know, if I had to, like, pick one off the shelf to listen to, it's probably going to be Wish You Were Here.
Yeah, I probably listen to The Wall more. But so here's the thing with The Wall. It's definitely more challenging material if you want to give it points for that, because it is a concept album and, you know, there's a lot of themes and so forth in it. But if you're just stacking individual songs, I got to go Wish You Were Here. I mean, you have the song Wish You Were Here, which is fucking incredible. Like, one of Pink Floyd's best songs, I think. Yeah. Which ranks it as, like, one of my favorite songs of all time.
Hey, it was covered by Brian May.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Yes, it was. And Dave Grohl.
And Dave Grohl.
Yeah, on the same track I think it was for Mission Impossible 2.
Yep.
I never actually owned that album, but I've owned that song since it came out, so.
I have that album. The Wish You Were Here, I actually have the 24 karat gold.
Ooh, that's nice.
CD version of it.
That's nice. I think I have a Queen album that's gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably plated, I'm going to guess.
Well, the way a CD is built is it's a plastic on either side, and there's just a thin metal, like, membrane in the middle. And that's where they burn the digital on it. So, I mean, sense. I'm sure it's... I think it's actually gold, but, I mean, it's just so thin. There's not really much gold there.
The idea of the gold CD is kind of insane when you think about it, because it's like, it is just a status symbol in a way. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, I want this because it's gold, but gold probably not the best material to use for CDs. I mean, just in that, like, it's very malleable. I'd imagine it could get fucked up a little bit easier than a normal
CD. It's probably not any different than the Mylar they use.
All right.
But it's
that cool factor.
I remember, like, going into the, I think I bought it at Hastings, and they had, because I wanted that album, and it's like, well, they have the regular version or the gold version. I'm going to pay the extra $10 and get the gold one.
Yeah, ironically, I have the gold version of, if it's not my least favorite Queen albums, it's one of my least favorites, A Day at the Races, and I still like it, but it's not the strongest album. I think it's A Day at the Races. Yeah, because it's the other one for Marx Brothers. Their first Marx Brothers themed album. Or
was A Night at the Opera.
Yes, yeah. And which is, like, I'd say their best album. I can't think of anything better. That every track on that album is fucking gold, you know.
I really like Jazz.
Jazz is pretty great, too. But if you're talking every track is gold, you can't tell me that the last track of Jazz is great, where they just, like, they have that song Fun It.
Oh, I don't even know that.
Oh, yeah, that's on there. They have the song Fun It that's on there, which isn't good. And then after that, they take every song and they put it together in, like, one big mashup song, which is, like, not a hip-hop mashup when they figured out how to do that. So that's not good either. Yeah. But a lot of good underrated songs, like Mustafa. I have no idea what he's singing because it's all in Arabic, I think. It's made to sound like Arabic anyway, I'll say that. But yeah, it's a fun song to say Mustafa, Mustafa. And then, like, a lot of words that I don't understand.
Yeah.
He says on that one. That's a pretty solid album, though.
And the other thing I liked about The Endless River so far, what I've listened to, is it feels like almost a continuation of The Division Bell.
Oh, I like that too. That Division Bell is a pretty good album.
That's
too.
I feel like that one got really underrated, like just because it was their last studio album.
I will say it's one of my favorite covers too. Like physical covers for the album, like is pretty cool looking. It's that Easter Island kind of.
Yeah, this has the two metal Easter Island head sort of things.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. That was pretty sweet. And there's some good songs on there. But
yeah, I really like the last track on that was my favorite, The High Hopes.
But it is their least... I'm not going to say that. It's a lesser chunk of time for the band, if I can say that. Like, so I would say the Syd Barrett stuff is my least favorite. Like, I appreciate
hands down,
Syd
like,
Barrett. And
for me.
He was important, and I get it, but... The Syd Barrett stuff is not all great. Most of it's far from great. But then when you cut into that era where Roger Waters was like kind of the driving force of that band, and then David Gilmour wasn't happy about it and kind of fighting back, but still like they were able to make music together, that was the fucking era.
Yeah.
For Pink Floyd. Like that is the shit where like everything, almost everything they put out was great. And then so they had just David Gilmour and I think
Wright.
Rick Wright rejoined the band. It was their drummer. I can't remember.
Nick
his
Mason.
Name. Nick
no.
Mason. Oh no, I'm wrong. You were right. It was Rick Wright and
Gilmour.
It was their keyboard player and Gilmour did like one album together and then they brought Mason back in. I forgot because the reason why Mason was not on that album was he wanted to produce The Wall. Like, he really wanted to do it bad, and the band wasn't really okay with it, but they tried to let him, and I guess he fucked up everything. And so eventually they, like, put another guy in charge, and that was, like, the demise of Nick Mason. Like, they kicked him out of the band after that because he was making a power play, and there's already two guys making power plays in that band.
Yeah, there was always historically a lot of power, like... Big egos in that band.
Oh, dude, that band has the biggest egos of any band that's ever existed. I'm just saying, dude, maybe Rick Wright doesn't have that big of an ego. When I hear Rick Wright talk, he just seems to be more into creating.
But you put Roger Waters, David Gilmour.
Dude, Kanye West cannot hold a candle to either one of those two. I mean, honestly. I know Kanye West has a gigantic ego, but his ego would be choked out by like Roger Waters or David Gilmour's. Like, if you were to put them in a room and let them expand, like the Pink Floyd egos would just choke out Kanye's ego before you even like covered a third of the room. Like that, those egos would just go out of its way to like knock against.
They
the
just
other
like
egos.
Honestly like expand,
just like. Force Kanye's into the corner and then just deflate Kanye's until it didn't exist anymore. And I'm not sure who has the bigger ego out of David Gilmour or Roger Waters. That's a tough thing to say.
I couldn't give you one way or another on that one.
I will say Roger Waters is the more vocal of the two egos. Because when you hear David Gilmour talk, he's a dick. Like, there's no question about it. He's a fucking dick. But Roger Waters, like, goes out of his way to be a dick to, like, the rest of the band in public interviews all the time. Like, he's incapable of talking about Pink Floyd for longer than maybe 2 minutes without just starting to, like, tear down other members of the band. He's just not capable of doing it. And I think part of that was because they restarted the band and didn't let Roger Waters back into it. You know what I mean? Like, that resulted in court battles. Like,
yeah.
So, when you got court battles going on, there you go, dude. There's going to be some hurt feelings that aren't going to go away.
But musically, they could put some shit together.
Fuck, man. And that's the sad thing. Like, some of the best bands were ones where, like, you had these two giant egos, and they were always fighting for control, but, like, they were still able to, like, create music and coexist. But those bands never last all that long. With each other anyway, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
like the Beatles were super short lived. And I really feel like after everything I've ever read about the Beatles and everything, and I know they've said lots on it, but ultimately it's kind of the McCartney-Lennon thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you really like boil it down, it seems to me it's because those two could not coexist together in a band.
That was pretty much the driving force behind that. I mean, I can't.
Like, Harrison was willing
he's,
to
we
go
like,
along.
He, yeah, and whatever he, like, happened, tried to, like, elbow his way in there a little bit, and they're like, no, fuck you. This is the Lennon-McCartney show.
Yeah. But Harrison would always coexist, and he was able to get a couple numbers up on albums every year, you know?
Yeah.
Ringo Starr, this is the thing about Ringo Starr that a lot of people don't understand. Because, like, you make jokes about Ringo Starr or whatever. He's a drummer, and he is the perfect drummer for the Beatles. This is something I've grown to appreciate. But the biggest reason why he's the perfect drummer for the Beatles was he didn't get in the way. Like, he was hired by them right before they went big. Like, he was not considered really a member of the Beatles until they struck it big, and he didn't ever make a power play. And I think because of that, he was the perfect drummer for him. Like, there's a lot of drummers that could have done what Ringo did, but I don't think...
Yeah, I think there's a lot of drummers that could do what Ringo did. But,
yeah, but I don't think...
But I don't think they'd have survived.
No, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, I think if you put any other drummer into that lineup of, like, personalities, they get choked out, and you wind up with rotating drummers for the Beatles. Like, I really feel that way. But Ringo was able to not only coexist with them, but to be able to get a couple of songs out, you know, which is saying something. I mean, like, Yellow Submarine is still a song kids love. It's still a song kids love. Like, it's a legitimate hit.
Well,
he wrote that, so.
It was funny, because...
I never thought I'd be taking the stance on Ringo.
A friend of ours, you know Dylan Dixon.
Yeah.
He's part of this group that I'm in. It's called On the Turntable right now on Facebook. And basically, whenever you're putting an album on the record, you throw a picture of what you're listening to, and one of his picture today was the Yellow Submarine album.
Oh, nice. Can you invite me into that group?
Yeah, I can send you a link on that.
Okay. I'd like
I know it's a closed group, but it's one of those things, like, you ask to be in, you're in.
Yeah, and I know Dylan, so I'm sure if you reminded him who I was, wouldn't be a problem. I hope. It's been a long time.
And it's one of those things that's, it's really interesting, that group, because it has members all over the world. There's a lot of people in the UK, Europe. And so, I mean, you get a lot of people, a lot of different views on music. So it's kind of an interesting, you just see, like, there's a lot of different, a lot of 60s, 70s stuff. And then, you know, you see a lot of the newer stuff, like, finding its way on there, and just obscure covers that...
Oh, this sounds great for me.
Like, just...
It's going to be interesting when my daughter randomly selects a record for me, too. That happens. It has been happening lately, but for a while there, it happened at least once a week on Sundays. I almost always put records on the turntables on Sunday mornings. It's something I usually... I didn't today, which is why I say usually, but usually I do. And I always let her pick out a song. Like, I'm just like, pick out a record. Because they're all my records. I already weeded out the ones I don't want to listen to at this point.
Yeah.
Like, I had some, and then I was like, you know what? There's got to be a real reason for me to have this in there now. So I took out a good, I'd say, fifth of my record collection. And, like, just got rid of them, because I was like, I'm not going to ever listen to this.
Yeah, it's,
there's one or two I have for the covers, like, just because they're great album covers.
Yeah. And it's interesting, some of the stuff I've learned about some of the albums I own. Like, I have this James Gang album that I inherited from my dad.
I bet I know the James Gang one. Does it show their pictures in, like, a square or, like, on the cover?
No, it's kind of a... It looks like, I can't, like a 60s, like a late 60s, early 70s. And it's got, like, the golden bar across the top. But anyways, there's a half track on the album. So usually there's a groove, like one solid groove that goes around.
Oh,
but there's a second groove.
Pick it up and put it into the
There's like groove. A second groove with a hidden track on the album. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
There's a Monty Python record that I didn't find out about until I didn't have access to it anymore because my dad had all of their comedy albums. And there's one that I guess they have a couple of sketches hidden on the record. And I had no idea until fucking decades after I didn't have that album anymore. And I was like, oh, really? I could have gone to the turntable and listened to their stuff. Because I heard Eric Idle in an interview talking about it. And he put it, he made sure that they were on there because Eric Idle was in charge of the albums. This is really interesting. I should throw this out there. If you get a chance to read this, this is, I've read a few. This is the best book on Monty Python that you will ever find. It's called Monty Python Speaks. And the entire book is Monty Python members in their own words talking about Monty Python. So in other words, there is never conjecture from the author or anything. It's literally all from interviews that the guy did with them, like put down verbatim of what they say. So you even have their speech patterns on there, or it's culled from interviews that they've done. Like, for example, Graham Chapman was dead by the time this came out. So it's all from previous like interviews that were on where they talked about certain things. But it was really entertaining. There was fights I never knew about in that group. It explained things I didn't know. But they talked about that record thing. And so Eric Idle, I think his dad was like, I think he did cricket games or something. Like he called some kind of games for the BBC. And so they would have the records, and when they would need a sound effect, they'd just lift up the needle and put it onto the groove that they were supposed to, and it stops on that groove. And so he made sure that he had that on one of the albums because he thought it would be a fun little thing. I never knew, dude. I'd listen to those albums a ton and never knew that that was on that album. But I guess Eric Idle was in charge of all their comedy albums because that was something he was interested in doing. Which is why there's a lot of Eric Idle songs on there, and then he would pull in members of the band for certain things.
Interesting.
But he's the driving force behind any of their albums. If you ever hear them, a lot of Monty Python fans nowadays have no idea there was ever albums. Dude, seriously, if you're a Monty Python fan, you need to listen to the albums. They're so funny. Even like the soundtrack for the soundtrack to the trailer, to the album, to the film of Monty Python and the Holy Grail is hilarious. Like, there are some sketches.
The executive movies. Version.
Yeah, the executive version. Remember that where they go to side two? And he's like, this is side two. If you want to listen to side one, turn it over. Do not listen to this side of the album. If you want to listen to side one, this is side two. And then they
we apologize for their that. This was meant for the non-executive version. No, of
this was meant for the purchasers of the lesser album, is what he says. Like, it's the most like fucking
condescending. Yes.
Love that. But there's a lot of shit, like sketches and stuff on that album that have nothing to do with the movie at all.
Yo, when you're describing this, I am kicking myself right now because I was in a pawn shop. No, it was about 2 or 3 months ago down in Bozeman. And they had a Monty Python album, and I didn't buy it.
Oh, bummer. Which one do you remember?
I don't remember what it was.
Okay, well, the ones I can remember on the top of my head are the aforementioned album to the trailer to the... or album to the trailer to the movie to the film? Is that something like that? Of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. There's the obligatory album, which is like, it's all white. And it looks like it's like a crumpled up sleeve on there. And it just says the obligatory album. And it's like, I think it was their last album that they put out that they had to put out to complete the album or
their contract.
Yeah. Which is like a long going thing. And I read this like big history on rock albums that they were forced to put out. There's some funny shit that's come up by big artists where they just like, did not give a fuck and put out the worst shit ever just to like finish their record contracts. Usually when they're getting screwed on something and they have a deal on the horizon, you know?
Yeah.
But one of my favorite stories with that was, I just forgot it. God damn. Shit is fleeting.
The only one I have was actually a compilation CD, which was the Final Ripoff.
Oh, the Pink Floyd?
No.
Or no. Oh, Monty Python.
Monty Python.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah.
I've heard that one too.
It still shows up because I have it like parts of it on my main playlist on my music.
Monty Python Sings is a fun one. You're not going to hear stuff that you can't hear off the albums or the movies. Like, it's all collected from there, but it's all like their songs. I think it's like 17 songs. And that's pretty fun. Like, if you're a Monty Python fan, that's one you should probably have. Monty Python Sings is pretty good.
I can't think of which one it was. It kind of, like, and I just saw it, and I was, because I was barely flipping through the little bin they had. And I saw it, and I was like, oh, $14. I don't know if I really want to spend that right now.
And you regret it.
I regret it now.
Yeah. Oh, well. Shit. It's something else interesting I heard about Monty Python that I never knew until I read that book. Once again, that's Monty Python Speaks. Check it out, dude. It's I cannot speak highly enough about that book. If you're a fan of Monty Python, it's a must read. And I don't say that about a lot of books, but this is a must read if you're a fan. And they talked about what was their last movie that they put out? It was Sketches, something with life, The Meaning of Life. Okay. So if you remember at the beginning of The Meaning of Life, they have this sketch where it opens up and there's all these...
The birth?
Nope. It's before that. There's all these people in a workshop and they're like... Or no, like they're doing accountant work.
Oh, the accountancy shanty.
Yes. They do cut into that song, but it's like 15 minutes long. And it's just this whole thing of they're being repressed on this thing, and then eventually they like have a mutiny and they kill their bosses, and then suddenly like their building like starts moving like a,
and they put like a
pirate ship.
Put like sails up on the top of the building.
Yeah, which is the only funny thing in the entire thing, that and the song. And then like, so I'd always watch that, and that was supposed to be like the little short before the movie started. And I remember watching that and always being like, that's so fucking odd for this movie. Like, why would you have that in there? And then it plays off later because they have some businessmen in a meeting. And I don't remember what they're doing, but they're doing something ridiculous. And all of a sudden the windows break open and you see the people from the opening feature like break in and like slide into the fucking building. And they just like murder all these people. And then they stop it and they're like, we're sorry. That we've taken precautions to make sure that the opening feature will not interfere with the rest of the film. And you see this other building go and like squash like the building that they're all in. Well, the reason why that all happened was Terry Gilliam had like, who also has an ego the size of Roger Waters and David Gilmour.
I think he's got a larger ego than both of them combined.
I think you're right. But, He like took his budget and started doing his thing, and they had no idea what he was doing because Terry Gilliam always worked by himself. And so typically with the movies and Flying Circus, he would watch some of the sketches and he'd be working on his cartoons, and then he'd just find a way to bleed it from whatever it started at and then ended at. So he would make it flow with the rest of the movie. So they just assumed he was doing his weird cartoon thing that he always did. No. He fucking films this entire thing, and they're looking at it like, what the hell is this? Like, it's not even funny. Eric Idle, like, wrote the song for that and had it added much against, like, Terry Gilliam's wishes. And then they had the thing where the building flattened the other building because they were like, we have to find a way to tie it in with the rest of the movie. Like, it doesn't fit otherwise. So the rest of the members were, like, really pissed off. That was kind of the writing on the wall that Monty Python was pretty much done at that point, was that, like, Gilliam just was so separated from the rest of them. And I guess he was the main director on Holy Grail, but he split time with Terry Jones, and then, which is why it looks so good. Like, if you watch that movie, it looks like a legitimate, you know, like a legitimate movie from the 70s that, like, where they have, like, expensive sets and everything looks, you know,
yeah,
like, legitimate. That was all Terry Gilliam. and he was spending tons of money on it, but he was such a difficult person to deal with as a director. They wound up just making Terry Jones the director. And so Terry Gilliam was demoted during that movie. And that was the start of the fights between them. Yeah, it's really interesting, man. And then Graham Chapman apparently was so crazy. He was just the worst drunk and used to
have
do
you,
the craziest shit.
Have you seen a Liar's Autobiography?
No, I have it on my Netflix queue and I haven't gotten around to watching it yet.
It's definitely not for the family film.
Right, right.
I mean, it gets pretty graphic in some points, but it is so interesting.
Yeah.
I mean,
he used to go and lay down in the middle of traffic just to fuck with people.
And it just, it's basically a biography on his life.
Graham Chapman.
And it's
the dead one.
And it is really interesting. It was one I had to wait for the wife to be out of town, the kids not home, sort of thing.
That was actually one of the interesting things too. So what they would do when they would write stuff is they would all partner off with each other when they're doing Flying Circus in their first couple of movies. They would just partner off with each other, okay? Except for Eric Idle, because he was so weird and he was an only child growing up that he got to do his own thing, and the rest of it, so Gilliam would he'd get his budget for cartoons and he'd do that himself, but he would help write sketches and he would partner off. They'd all partner off, right? John Cleese was pissed because he would always get partnered with Graham Chapman, and Graham Chapman was so out of control that John Cleese always felt like they were just dumping him off on him. And everybody else admits, I didn't want to work with him. he was brilliant when he was going, but which is why he stayed in the group. But he was really, really difficult for all the other members. And
they really get into that in that film. You really should check that one out.
Okay. Yeah, I'll check it out. I've been meaning to watch it. I just haven't gotten around. It's one of those things, you got 100 things that eventually.
It's so terrible. You have the whole bunch. I have a whole.
Two things will happen. They'll either remove it from their thing eventually, or you'll watch it. It's always going to be one of the two.
I have a lot of Kevin Smith on my Netflix that doesn't get watched.
Yeah.
Because I have the
cartoon movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't gotten around to watching that. I don't know if I will or not, but.
Yeah. I started watching the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back the other night, and I stopped.
Yeah. I got that on DVD, so it's not it's not priority for me to watch that on Netflix.
They released that on Netflix, and I saw it the other day. I was like, oh, I kind of want to watch that. And I got it 10 minutes in, and I'm like, I'm not going to go to bed.
Yeah, maybe I'm not in the mood right now.
The wife wasn't in the mood, so that.
That's tough. That watching comedies with my wife is the toughest thing when she's not into it, because I'm laughing, and then I'm laughing harder trying to get her to laugh, and this is terrible, dude. It's an awful time. There's no way to bring down a comedy more than watching a comedy with one other person who doesn't want to be watching the comedy.
Yeah.
That kind of kills it.
My wife hasn't seen Red State yet, and I don't know if I could ever talk her into that, especially after watching Tusk now. Yeah.
Matt Campbell brought up something that I had said but got way more in depth, and he's exactly right. So if you go back and look, We Had a Good Life and they talk about Tusk, he's definitely got a good line on it. He knew what he was talking about. And he was saying that Tusk, the way that it works is you listen to that podcast and then you watch the movie, and there's so many things that you get that you wouldn't get if you hadn't listened to the podcast. And he's right. I never took that film all that seriously because I was always thinking about them giggling on the podcast. But he went and watched it with his girlfriend, and he made her listen to the podcast when they were driving down from Bozeman to go see Tusk here. And so he made her listen to it in the car, and so she enjoyed the movie because she had heard the podcast. But he was like, I don't know if she would have gotten into that if she hadn't heard the podcast. And
I really wish I would have taken that approach to this movie.
Yeah, I do too, because my wife is still horrified.
Oh.
Dude, our wives were going off about it on Halloween.
Oh, yeah, they were totally going off on that one.
They were being merciless to us. And then, of course, Brent just sells us down a river like, yeah, I thought it was really rough. It's like, shut up, Brent. This is a 2-2 argument. You're supposed to be on our side.
Damn it, bros before hoes.
That's right. He's, you're literally his bro. This shit's not cool.
Oh, man. Every once in a while, I just like to rib my wife a little bit. So I made a joke about somebody being turned into a walrus, and she just, like, flipped.
I don't even joke about it because it's a sore subject with my wife. But she keeps getting mad at me and saying, you told me to be funny. And I keep telling her, I never said that. Like, Dub for the We Had a Good Life podcast. We ran into him. The day before we saw that movie, we went for a walk and we ran into Dub and his wife, Darcy. And we know Darcy because we used to work with Darcy for a long time. So he was just like, dude, it is the funniest movie. And he was just like going off. And so, like, he put that expectation.
Oh.
And my wife was like, she keeps saying that I said it. I'm like, I never said it was going to be funny. I never said that. Like, I thought it was going to be a goofy, like, so bad it's good horror movie.
That's what I had expectations going in. And it's funny because my wife was the driving force to seeing this movie. Because she had read reviews on them. Of course, I had read reviews too, and I'm in, but
yeah.
I didn't know where my wife stood on the subject. She's like, yeah, I kind of want to see that.
The other funny thing that happened when I ran into Dub and Darcy. So, like, here's the thing. I'm like a super huggy guy. Like, I just hug everybody, right? Like, I just do. And so I ran into it. I was like, oh, hey, how's it going? And so we were talking for a little bit. And then, like, I gave Dub, like, the biggest hug because that's what we do. Like, we're huggy friends, you know? And then I saw Darcy, and I, like, went to give her a hug. And she pulled away, not because she wasn't going to hug, but just because, like, she was walking away and didn't realize it went in for the hug. So I, like, got this, like, awkward hug, and it was awful, dude. And then I started feeling bad and looking at Dub, and I was thinking, like, is he going to take offense to that? And then Darcy's like, oh, that's a terrible hug. Hold on. That was my fault. And then gave me a nice hug. But I was walking away. I was like, that was fucking awkward, dude.
That's funny.
Like, it could have been in an episode of Seinfeld or something, like somebody hugging George's fiance and then having it go badly. But yeah, fortunately I know Darcy, so it's no big deal. She has never come up again, and I've ran into Dub at least 5 times since then. So we live in the same neighborhood, but we never record together. It's kind of weird, right?
It is weird. I don't think we've had him on Montucky's Guys.
No, we haven't had Dub or Matt yet. I want to. But Matt lives in Bozeman. I think he'd be the easiest to get. And I've been thinking about Dub, but I've made the offer once or twice since it's never happened. So I can't say I haven't recorded with them, though. That's not entirely true because I went on their podcast.
Yeah.
And then I recorded.
You've been on We Had a Good Life, but we haven't.
Yeah.
We haven't reciprocated, buddy.
I think it'll happen eventually. It's bound to happen. Maybe after 200 or something. The push for 200. They do a push for 100, so they're starting to talk about their push for 200.
Yeah.
But we're getting close. We started talking about that. Like, we're at, I think this is 176.
Yeah.
I have to look at the numbers to be 100% sure, but I think...
Yeah, we're like 176, 177, somewhere in there.
Well, if this is episode 176, we have 177 in the can.
Nice.
Just whether we put it out or not, because we have that bonus one. Like... I know we've talked about it on the show, but we tend to record an extra episode so that if it doesn't work out for a week, we can just lay down the extra episode.
We get, so. Give the listeners what they need.
Yeah, and I've also, it's my vanity too a little bit. Like, I've noticed that.
Then it gives you something to do even if we didn't record that week.
It gives me something to do. And it's also like I obsess with the numbers from time to time. Sometimes I get out of it, but I always come back into it. And I always notice that noticeable dip for at least a month. if we miss one episode, it's at least a month before we rebound the numbers.
Ouch.
Like, I think people just forget about it if it's not there from week to week. So I don't think it's anybody being finicky. I just think it's like there's some people that don't subscribe. That could. You could go on iTunes and subscribe. There's other feeders.
There's all types of stuff on the Not Safer Network.
That's right. Hey, and if you're one of the new listeners because you got this through Microsoft Zune or something like that, like, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We have a whole backlog at MontuckySkies.com.
We have 175 confirmed episodes.
I'm going to be honest, dude. I don't recommend necessarily, unless you're a hardcore fan, I really don't recommend listening to anything before there's an episode. I think it's called Live from Studio A. I don't necessarily recommend listening to anything before that, because that was when we got the microphones in.
You know, I would go back before that, and the ones where we, there were some bad ones, like we were recording in the garage, just had the Tascam in the garage.
See, I don't think those were so bad, but it's like when we're recording with Adrian and his kids are being super loud, those ones drive me crazy. Those are the ones that, like, when I've tried to go back from time to time, I just hear so much noise and I'm like, oh, I can't take this. Like, turn it off. It made me a little bit mad at the time. Like, there wasn't anything we could do at the time. Like, we just had kids and we had to have them in the background. But, like, it happened a lot, like, in the earlier episodes.
Yeah. So.
But, you know, it was better than no podcast. We were learning.
Like, hey, we even recorded at Studio B.
That's right.
We had one recording in my house, so.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I should go back. So the name of the episode I'm thinking of when we first got the recordings, I think, was Studio G. That was what we called
it.
Because I was living at my grandma's house at the time. Like, we were trying to buy the house.
If you're, like, looking back, I would start at, like, Avengers Assembles, probably.
Yeah, you're kinder than I am. I'm just going for audio quality. We had the shtick down by the time we had good microphones,
I think. Yeah.
Like, I think we were putting
There was quality
content.
Yes, yeah.
I agree. It was just, I feel like anything pre, like, Shure microphones was, it's difficult for me as a person who likes to cut audio to listen to. So I guess
that's
my hang up. But,
so the other thing, I went and saw a football game yesterday.
Oh yeah. Cats game.
Oh man, it was such a great game. And I don't we don't get too much into sports on this show, but.
Not anymore, but we used to, if you listen to old ones. If you're curious how the football
everything
teams,
put dirt on it.
Yep. If you want to hear how our teams were doing, or any football team was doing, like, you know, around 2011, by all means, listen to the old episodes that are 2 hours long. They were, dude.
Yeah, they were. They were like a good solid hour of what we do now, and then an hour of football.
Yep, and we would mix it up for a while. That was a mistake, too, I got to admit, because we just want to talk about all these other things, but we would eventually cut back to it. I like where we're at now.
Yeah.
I like that we sprinkle in some news, or if it is necessary, we'll spend an entire episode of news, like nerdy news, but I like that we more just shoot the shit now. Like, I like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to plug that other shooting the show.
You just did, dude.
No, I'm not doing that.
Well, here's what I'm going to say.
Because we're pushing for 2,000, damn it.
So if you're not aware of this, I guess go back and listen to them. But they had their last episode. They called us out, dude. They used you and Zach by name, too, by the way, and me by name. Like, they literally called us out. And they were making fun of us because they're ahead in the podcast. I made the mistake of showing Connor, like, where you could see the numbers. And he saw they were clearly whooping us on this show. Like, ever since we cleaned up the title of the show, it gets so many hits.
Damn it, Biggs.
As of right now, while I'm recording this, they're 40 hits shy of hitting 2,000 a week. And so, Eric was saying on the show that he'll do anything to get 2,000 hits, and he wants to do a vote. So I'm going to put it up on the page here pretty quick this week. So we need to come up with some things that Eric should have to do if they get 2,000 hits, because he was doing this, but I'm afraid his friends are going to listen and they'll be the only ones that comment. So if you really love this show, that's, you know, I got to talk to Dub and Matt about getting in on this too. Really like getting a lot of votes. So one thing Eric said he would do was he would record naked, but that doesn't seem good enough, does it? Like,
no.
Record naked because nobody sees it. Although, how do we know?
It's just the other awkward people in the room at that point. The viewer doesn't get in on that funness.
So here's what I think we should do. Put a cover for the episode after he gets 2,000 hits with Eric naked in the cover. I think that's one option, right? Is that pretty good?
You get the hand.
We need at least an ass. Like an uncovered ass.
At least a nipple.
No, nipple's not enough, dude. Nipple, are you kidding me?
You're right.
Yeah,
you're
right. We need an ass.
We need an ass.
So that's one option, like show your ass.
Your ass? If you don't want to show the ass, you have to cover your junk and you have to show a side leg.
What about a sock over the crotch?
Hey, Sockman's legit.
All right. Yeah, Sockman.
We're going Sockman. Connor, you're getting Sockman if you hit 2,000.
So there's one option. I'm sure we could come up with some other ones, right? What about a YouTube video where we see him mix up something disgusting and drink it? He's of that age where he'd do that, right?
Yeah. I don't know. It just doesn't...
Not as much fun. What if it's horrible?
Okay. And here's something that I've felt bad on because I've welched and... You know, next week is Cadgary is on.
I know where you're going with this.
Okay.
You talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah, this was a bet that I have never fulfilled at this point.
You haven't fulfilled it because I haven't pushed you on it, though.
No, and it's been one of those things like I have every intention on fulfilling this bet, but every night we've recorded, it's been like... The conditions haven't been right, like...
Yeah.
Because if you listen back on the recordings...
Let's go back a ways.
It was a face-first snow angel.
On yellow snow.
Of a place of a person's choosing.
We should make him do a peace snow angel. I think that's a great idea. That's another great idea.
Yeah.
So we got Sockman. We got Piss Snow Angel. I think we need one more to put up there. This has to be a Sophie's choice. Like, there can't be an easy solution out of this, right?
It has to be.
So we need to come up with one more. Dude, maybe we should get Zach on the horn really quick. You want to try and get Zach on the phone?
I think we should.
I sort of want to go a slightly different direction.
Okay.
Because with Sockman and the face down snow angel, it's sort of, there's the fear of it comes from the immediate moment, right? Like it's a relative immediate feeling of the shame and fear or what have you, right?
Right.
So I want to go with the long con.
The long con is always a good option.
Where the fear, he doesn't realize how awful it is until he's a good 4 or 5 weeks
in. It's a trap!
So I think I've come up with a pretty great swirl of torture because it involves homework and a television show that he almost definitely will not enjoy.
Okay.
So, are you familiar with a television program called The Carrie Diaries?
Yes, I am familiar. So, for those not in the know, this is the prequel, I guess, to Sex and the City. Like, it's the author who's Carrie, right?
Right.
And, yes.
And the show is based around her.
And it existed on the CW, and it takes place in the 80s high fashion world.
Oh, Jesus, this is going to be unbearable.
So, what I'm going to have, what my challenge will require him to do, is to watch the first 6 episodes of said program. He will also be required to once a week give me a no less than 200-word recap of the episode. including his favorite scene in the episode and a top 3 power ranking of the best characters on the show and why.
Okay, I can one up that. What if...
Here's the one last thing.
Okay.
I will be reading these essays on the show 100% if he chooses this.
Well, you just fucking... I was going to say, let's incorporate it into the podcast, but yeah, you just nailed it.
Yeah, it has to be on air.
Yeah, you nailed it, dude.
Of course.
So we can report it back on our show. I like your thinking, dude. And that'll get us more hits in the end.
Exactly.
And I almost guarantee... Snow Angel, that Snow Angel versus Sock Man versus Carrie Diaries. I think you're right. He's going to go Carrie Diaries.
And that's the best thing, because it really tests how much he doesn't want to do those one moment things, because it's going to seem fine at first.
At first.
Like, by the second episode, I'm sure they're like, oh, this isn't so bad. By weeks, of writing these motherfuckers, he's gonna want no part of it.
Well, you are brilliant once again, sir. I'm so glad you were able to get on the hind end of the podcast here.
I'm glad we got to test out this technology. It's nice to know it works.
Yeah, we might have to use it in future podcasts for sure. All right,
absolutely.
Well, thank you, Zach. We'll let you get back to sleep. I appreciate it, man.
All right, you guys have a good time. Enjoy the show, everybody.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Zach.
So there you go. We got our 3 options for Eric, and I'm just going to go ahead and put it up on the page like right before shooting the show goes up. And so, Eric, I mean, you can back out of this, but everybody's going to know because we got at least...
We got recording of this.
We got... Yeah, not only do we have 1,400 hits listening to this, and I would add, like, you're close to 2,000 because he has to hit 2,000 for this to happen. That was part of the bet. So not only is that happening, but then you just add on the little factor, like, you know, I might put this on Box Office Battle just to make sure we get the extra people. So, Eric, you're going to be disappointing a lot of people if you don't do this. So we're calling you out, sir. And I think this is a good place to kill a podcast. What do you think?
Sounds good.
All right. So take it easy.
Bye, guys.
Bye, Zach. I didn't know you were hanging out to ruin the outro.
Well, I was gonna hang up, but then I realized I could still hear you guys recording, and I wanted to see how it played out.
Fair enough. This is gonna be marvelous. Hello, what can I do for you today?
Well, I am looking for Christmas presents for my family. Just, I really let it go this year. Do you have anything good for me?
Of course, the We Had a Good Life podcast, which you can find on the Not Safer Network.
A podcast? I guess I was thinking more like a Furby, maybe?
Maybe Montucky Skies is more up your alley.
Is that also a podcast? Because again, I'm looking for something a little more tangible.
Podcast? Why, speak no further. We've got Box Office Battle.
You know, I gotta say, I'm beginning to feel like you're not listening to me. Again, looking for gifts like I can put in a box or a bag and wrap them for my friends and family.
Perhaps shooting the show would be more your speed.
You know, work with me, not for me. Let's try to attack this as a team. Again, gifts, family.
Is your family into art?
Sure, yeah.
Well, then the Thin Man podcast would be right up your alley.
All right, do you have something that's not a podcast? Because this is a little frustrating.
Real Roulette isn't a podcast anymore, but we do have the archives available on the Not Safer Network.
I mean, it seems pretty clear at this point you have an agenda. You're not going to sell me the toy robot. You're not going to sell me the beautiful handbag. And you're not going to sell me that cool poncho. What are you going to sell me?
That's debatable. It's a podcast about arguing.
You know, I gotta say, at this point, I feel like I understand arguing. So I'm tempted, but again, not what I'm looking for.
So you're looking for something tangible that you can hold in your hands.
Ideally.
Well, why not the Not Safe for Network podcast, which you can hold in your hands on your iPod or MP3 player?
Sure, that counts.